If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gibb. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, it's just me getting into some hot topics from the week and then sharing some thoughts on this week's episodes of Real Housewives. I'm recording this from my childhood bedroom at home in DC, and I'm here because my family is hosting our annual fundraiser for our charity tonight. Indulge me for like 30 seconds on this while I explain. It's called the Gobo Go Fund, named after my brother who had cancer when he was in sixth grade. He's been healthy for over 20 years now, which we're so thankful for, but this also marks the 20th anniversary of our fundraising party. We throw a themed party every year to raise money for the fund, which helps the families of children with cancer being treated at the Georgetown University Hospital. It goes towards things like bills of all kinds, really. Phone bills, utility bills, internet bills, medical supplies, rent, transportation, just to make the lives of the families of these kids easier as they go through treatment. We've raised almost $1 million over the last 20 years, and it's something that means a lot to my family and to me. Anyway, all of that is to say, if you feel inclined to donate anything you can, even like $5, it would mean the world to me. You can go to gobogo.org, gobogo.org. There's also a direct link in the show notes, and you can also even Venmo at Community Betterment, CommunityBetterment, with the title Gobo 2025 to donate that way. Make it super easy. Anyway, that's my spiel for just a minute up top here. Indulge me, and the rest will be about reality TV on Bravo. So on to today's episode, and thanks to anybody who feels inclined to support. So we got some quick updates from Andy Cohen, actually, today, as I'm recording on Thursday. He said that Real Housewives of Rhode Island is nearly done filming. It's definitely giving Jersey vibes. He said, quote, it's popping. If they're almost done filming now, I'm guessing that we'll get some sort of maybe the cast reveal at BravoCon. That's my guess for that. He also gave an update that Real Housewives of Beverly Hills has finished filming for the upcoming season, which is exciting. That is in the bank. And then Real Housewives of New York, he said there will be some new women on the cast, and the cast has not been completely locked in yet. So they're clearly making a lot of, you know, decisions, and there's movement happening there. And I feel like on the last mailbag episode, somebody asked me if I thought we'd see Jersey or New York with a new season first. And I think that this hints that New York is definitely ahead of Jersey in terms of, you know, potentially getting back into production. I know that Jersey's doing some test filming though. And speaking of that, you know, we had heard that, you know, Melissa, Margaret, Dolores, they were doing some test shoots with potential new Housewives of Jersey. Which, you know, obviously, if that report is true, then the implication there is that, like, you know, Bravo's probably going to go with that side of the group, which, you know, doesn't seem promising for Teresa's potential return to the show. But Teresa hadn't responded to that. And this week, she appeared on Access Hollywood, and she also appeared on Jeff Lewis Live alongside Gia. I believe they're promoting their upcoming appearance on Special Forces. And she used this one line. She said, you know, in regards to her not being part of those rumored test shoots, does a professor ever take a test? She said. She also said we should wait for Bravo to make that decision. And I think it's a great line. Listen, it's a great line. Does a professor ever have to take a test? But it loses its impact when you use it twice. She used the same line on both Jeff Lewis Live and Access Hollywood. So clearly, obviously, like a canned PR answer, and that's okay. I think it's a good line, but maybe word it differently if you're going to use it in two back-to-back appearances. All of that is to say that this makes me inclined to watching these clips of Teresa makes me more inclined to believe the rumors. Because, you know, it's like, just because she's the OG, you know, the OG of Jersey, doesn't mean that they wouldn't want her in for test filming. Like, she's not above that, especially because, like, if the argument is that Teresa is so important to, like, the health of the Jersey franchise, like, it can't exist without her, then you'd think that production would want to make sure that any potential new women would work well with her. Like, they'd want to ensure that and make that extra important, right? So her not being part of that, and I think that her, you know, saying that line to me kind of confirms that those test shoots probably did happen. Because otherwise she would be like, that's bullshit. So yeah, that's my sort of read on that. I don't think that like her fate is sealed, but I do think it's telling the way that she answered those questions. So the other interesting update is that Craig Conover from Southern Charm, he's going to start a production company. And this is reading from Peter White's exclusive at Deadline, who broke the news. It says Craig Conover, star of Southern Charm, is getting into the TV production business. He's launching Plaid Horse Productions with plan to launch his own slate of reality series. He's teamed up with people who have been behind things like Cash Cab, Ghost Hunters, Betty White's Off Their Rockers, Stylish with Jenna Lyons, that show that was on HBO Max during the pandemic where people were sort of competing, I think, to be her assistant or something. It was kind of like the Bethany show that they had on that on HBO Max back in the day. It was mid, but that sort of tells me that potentially he would still be maybe centered as talent in some of these potential new reality series that he'd be working on, but more in maybe like a hosting situation versus like, you know, a docuseries type show about him. The article also says that his longtime business partner, Jerry Casolano, will be the president of Plaid Horse Productions. He's also the one who co-founded and is the CEO of Sewing Down South, the sewing business. And that's who Kyle always points to as being proof that Craig doesn't actually run Sewing Down South. He's just the face of it. That's Kyle speaking, not me. But that setup works well for them, whatever the Sewing Down South setup is. Clearly that works well. So they're kind of replicating it here in the production company. To me, it sounds like that. It says the company is gearing up to take out a slate of ensemble-driven reality cast shows and is also working on relationship experiments, socially-driven formats, and competition series. And then Craig said, after spending over a decade in front of the camera, it feels awesome to be stepping behind the scenes and getting involved from day one, helping shape the vision, build out the programming, and connect with the right people. Being part of something from the ground up like this feels really exciting. And honestly, I couldn't ask for a better team to bring Plaid Horse Productions to life. So extremely exciting for Craig. And I'm surprised, honestly, that more reality stars haven't done something like this. But my read on the whole thing, to be honest, is that this is kind of him planting more seeds for, you know, a potential Southern Charm exit in the not so distant future. Like whether that's after this upcoming season, which is already filmed, coming out later this year, or after the next season. I just feel like, you know, he's laying the groundwork, I think, for that to be maybe his reality. And like the reason for that speculation for my part is I just feel like I get the sense of the experience of the Paige breakup. No, he thought that Paige was like, you know, his forever, right? And he thought they were going in the distance and it was going to be them for life. And I think that that breakup shook him, obviously, in a lot of different ways. But I also think that sort of the fallout, not fallout, sort of the really divisive reaction to that breakup and the way that it was very drawn out over the course of like 6 months. And, you know, it was pretty messy. It ended up being really messy. And I kind of feel like maybe it made him realize that he doesn't want to have to share his life on camera like that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if he's thinking about, you know, a potential future girlfriend or future wife and starting a family, like if I were him after 10 years, like I'd be kind of over it too. Like I'd be kind of like, is this worth it? Like I'm making really good money from this. I can really capitalize on this if I start this production company now before I leave Southern Charm But that's sort of my read on it. I feel like he doesn't really want to be involved in the drama anymore. So if he can be, you know, behind the scenes, like he said, I feel like that's probably more appealing to him at this point. And just like it allows him to protect that side of his life, that if you're on Southern Charm, like you're very much expected to share that. And I think when you're expected to share that, it's much harder to make that succeed and work in the long run in terms of relationships and building a family. And so I totally understand if that's sort of what this means, because, you know, he's had a very long and fruitful run on Southern Charm. And like, if he were to leave after this upcoming season, or maybe after one more season, he would leave with pretty much most of his reputation and image intact. He's still very widely liked, even though like online, you know, it probably feels like he's less liked because of the whole Paige thing, because, you know, a lot of Paige fans are very vocal, and that's not a criticism. That's just kind of the nature of it. I feel like the divisiveness feels much louder online than it actually is kind of in reality, like meaning that like I still think that Craig is kind of like the number one guy on Bravo. And I feel like he's still kind of the golden boy. So if he were to leave, like that's, I think people said a lot of good things about Paige leaving at sort of the height and at the right time. And I think that you could say the same for Craig if he were to leave after a season or two more on Southern Charm. And then if you think about, like, you know, down the road, let's say, you know, Craig, Austin, Shep, if that trifecta isn't necessarily in the picture on Southern Charm in a year or two, you know, it obviously opens up that show to have a quasi reboot. You inject some younger guys who are more down to do sort of like the hooking up and the heavy lifting and all of that, because they've sort of done that on the female side of the show, like several times at this point. So that's just total speculation and conjecture based on this production company announcement. So maybe that's a little like unhinged of me, but I do think that moves like this, like big moves like this, can often imply and sort of point to bigger plans. And that's sort of my guess on this whole situation.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for Doggy Dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit the upsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, so the other thing that happened this week, I don't know if this is a super online thing, but I'll map it out for you guys. So Robin Dixon and Gisele Bryant, they are still going strong with Reasonably Shady. I don't listen to it, but like I actually think it's incredibly impressive that they've been keeping that podcast going on. I mean, I think it's at 4 years now. I think they started it in 2021. And I feel like when they started it, people were like, you know, why do they need this podcast? I feel like on the show, there was a little bit of shade about like the size of their audience when they did a live show. But they've been keeping it going. The ball is still rolling. And I think it's very impressive because there are plenty of Bravo Liberty podcasts, both, you know, with single hosts or, you know, similarly like duo hosts of podcasts that have come and gone in the years since Reasonably Shady started. And they are still going strong and chugging along. And I think they should be proud of that, honestly. And when I was thinking about this idea, actually, I went to go check on some of the some Bravo Liberty podcasts that have launched in the past year or two. And it's weird. The Alexia and Marisol podcast, I Por Favor, as well as Michelle from the Valley. I feel like there's one other one. If you go to their podcast pages on Apple Podcasts, it's been replaced by this like weird dating show that I've never heard of. Like their feeds were taken over by a new show and they've both been taken over by the same show. Some other iHeartRadio show. So it's really odd. I mean, Michelle's podcast didn't last very long at all. And I feel like I Por Favor was like at least a year. But yeah, that's all to say that Reasonably Shady, I'm impressed by them continuing this show. So anyway, on a recent episode, this clip was clipped out by Jay's reality blog on Twitter. And it's Gisele and Robin talking about the rumors that Kay Michelle from Love & Hip Hop is joining Real Housewives of Atlanta, and that Angel Love from Basketball Wives is joining Married to Medicine as a friend. And so Robin says, I really thought that the networks tried to avoid crossovers from different networks, but I'm like, is Atlanta running out of people? You're using people from other networks now, which I agree with. I always thought that, you know, Andy would always use that excuse to explain why he is against having Snooki on Real Housewives of New Jersey. Like, oh, she's already too associated with another reality show. But, you know, Ashley I from The Bachelor Nation is going to be on Real Housewives of Rhode Island. K. Michelle is going to be on Atlanta, apparently. Angel Love is apparently going to be on Married to Medicine. I had not heard that. So that was always my impression as well. But I feel like they're being more lenient with that apparent rule these days. But Robin goes on to say that K. Michelle was someone before Love and Hip Hop. She was already who she was as a singer before Love and Hip Hop. So she was already established. So she's not like fully a reality star. And she pointed to Cardi B, who, you know, was kind of created on Love and Hip Hop, and now she's somebody else. But she said that K. Michelle already had her career. And, you know, in this clip, like, they're really not insulting these women. They are very much just being like, huh, like, we're surprised that they are adding them to these shows because of, you know, them being so associated with other reality shows. So it's more about, like, it wasn't even necessarily a criticism of production. It was just sort of like, wait, like, why are we casting from these already existing pools? So that was sort of my impression of them having that conversation. It was actually very respectful. And I thought it was actually kind of like praiseworthy of these women for like already being established outside of Housewives. So anyway, I just didn't think they were taking jabs at them. But K. Michelle and Angel Love both had very strong responses to this, which kind of hint, I guess, at what we can expect from them on their shows. So K. Michelle goes, why be so worried about me and my overly educated and successful self and what I'm doing? Robin, you ran out of a job a long time ago. You would love to be recycled, you little couch potato, Jesse Yappin. You should have ran through that hotel lobby where your husband was, lady. Giselle, you look beautiful. Leave me alone and let me go yodel in peace. I'm around here selling out shows and you selling baseball hats, but you're worried about me and what I might be doing. The nerve of this couch potato. I'm dead. I mean, tag yourself. You should have ran through that hotel lobby where your husband was. And then she just says, Giselle, you look beautiful. I don't think that Robin and Giselle's clip merited this strong of a response because, again, they weren't taking a jab at her. But if this response, again, I didn't watch Love and Hip Hop, so I'm not familiar with the K. Michelle game. Apparently, it is very strong. But if this is what we can expect from her, she's saying this when she's filming the show, then I'm seated for K. Michelle on The Real Housewives of Atlanta. Like, that just, wow, what a response. You should have ran through that hotel lobby. Woo! And then Angel Love was a little bit less strongly worded. She says, let me reintroduce myself. Whether I am or not doing M2M, I've been that girl. 15 years of saving lives, building businesses, and creating legacies long before reality TV. This isn't a storyline. This is my real life. So that's more like her just sort of capitalizing on this moment, this viral moment from Robin and Giselle, which went viral on Twitter and stuff. And so again, I think they're doing a little too much because Robin wasn't calling them out. And I am also similarly confused from Robin as to like, this rule changing. I'm not against the rule changing. I just think it's interesting. But then the last thing I'll say about the situation is that Robin, pulling this up right now, she went on her Instagram and she posted a selfie on the couch in one of her baseball hats. And she says, still selling satin lined baseball hats for my couch. I love it here. Visit www.embellishshop.com to shop. This olive green micro suede cap is perfect for fall. And you know what? I said kudos to them for still doing reasonably shady. Kudos to her for still doing embellished hats, which I thought was just sort of like maybe for the show. But also that being said, I'm clicking on the Instagram right now. And they haven't posted since fall of 2024. So maybe she should have posted this as at least a dual post with her business. She did tag them. So anyway, that was just a funny little, you know, moment involving Robin from Potomac. And honestly, I have to say it. I wouldn't be against Robin coming back to Potomac in a season or two. I feel like she seems lighter and more fun again. And obviously it was very dark for her at the end of her time on that show with the Juan stuff. And speaking of the hotel lobby, the stuff about him potentially cheating on her in a hotel. I feel like they seem past that. And so I'm not against a Robin return in the near future. All right. The Real Housewives of Miami this week. I thought it was fun. There were three big standout scenes that really I should probably just touch down on. They're still on the cruise at the beginning of the episode, coming out of that conversation between Marisol and Stephanie, where Marisol, I thought she was like, you know, I thought she took ownership of the fact that it was her idea to stay behind and not go on her plane to Marbella. But then during the spa day the following day, Alexia and Stephanie finally like hash out their issues with one another. And Alexia's like, well, actually, it was Marisol who wanted to stay. It wasn't me. I wanted to go. And Stephanie's like acting surprised at this information. But I feel like Marisol just told her this and they hashed it out. So I was confused why she was acting like it was such new information. I guess the new information was that Alexia also said that Marisol was mad at Stephanie for going to lunch with Adriana and like annoyed, basically implying that she was like annoyed that they were getting close. Which, if that's true, that's bullshit, because everybody on the cast has every right to go to lunch with one another and like get to know the new girl. Like, I don't understand if that's the truth and that's sort of why Stephanie is re-mad at Marisol. But I feel like they were acting like it was because it was her idea. So I don't know. And then it got into this whole idea that Stephanie has this hypothesis now that, you know, Marisol is really the instigator behind the scenes with Alexia, and that Alexia is just her mouthpiece and Marisol is really the mastermind of all of this. Like, she kind of uses Alexia to get information out there. And there were a couple receipts shown on the show about, like, you know, Alexia being like, oh, well, I heard this. And somebody's like, where'd you hear that? And Alexia's like, I won't tell. And then the person says, I think it was Adriana in the scene, she was like, was it Marisol? And Alexia's like, I won't lie, it was Marisol who told me this. And so they had some like moments where it seemed like Marisol is almost feeding Alexia information and having her repeat it on camera, which, like, honestly, you know, I feel like it was Adriana who was pointing to Marisol's background with PR and how, you know, that's sort of the job of a PR person to get messages out there like that. So it's not necessarily surprising. I think adding to that conversation, I think is really interesting, is that I didn't really know that Alexia and her sister didn't talk for several years because of, I think, their mother's funeral, which was, I believe, the reboot season when they came back after their decade hiatus for season 4. And Alexia had all those crazy things happening in her life. And on top of all of it, you know, she has her mother's funeral on the day that she was supposed to marry Todd. And it wasn't filmed, but they did film a scene outside of the funeral. And I was actually on Anna Kinkosis's podcast Reality Court this week, and we recapped this episode. And she was telling me how she knows the sister really well. She married this doctor, and she's a very relaxed, like, you know, low key person who doesn't want anything to do with, you know, the show and all the, like, show business and everything that comes along with it. And so it sounds like, to me, the implication is that potentially the filming of the funeral, Alexia wanting to like make the funeral part of the show, rubbed the sister the wrong way, and they fought over it. And that seems to be sort of maybe why they didn't talk for a couple years, which I think is totally understandable. But I also think that from Alexia's perspective, you know, season 4 was a big return for that show, and there's a lot of pressure and a lot riding on that return for Miami. And there was so much going on in Alexia's life, the sort of central character of the show. And, you know, I understand also the pressure that she probably felt to, you know, make this part of the show, because it happened during filming. And just the timing was so crazy, and just the whole thing, like, it was unavoidable. So I get the sister's apparent perspective, but I also get her perspective. Anyway, I mention all that because obviously we also know also that Stephanie is not speaking to her sisters, and she's had a lot of drama with her sisters, which also reminds me of Britt having a lot of drama on Atlanta with her sisters. And both Britt and Stephanie, which is interesting, they both are women with a lot of sisters who pointed to early on in their time on the show to the fact that they had very few girlfriends before joining the show. And they both had falling out with their sisters. So there's some through line there that I think is really kind of fascinating. But I think, you know, if you think about, you know, so Alexia, let's say her and her sister stopped talking around the end of season 4. Her and Marisol were already tight, you know, season 4. I think they got really tight during the hiatus for the show. But I feel like they weren't like a duo until like 5, 6, 7. Maybe I'm having revisionist history here. But I feel like I didn't know about the sister factor in terms of something that would have pushed Alexia and Marisol to be even closer than they already were and sort of making them even more of a duo. Like, I could see Alexia leaning more on Marisol, leaning more into that relationship because she didn't have her sister in her life at the time for years. And so that pushes them closer. That makes them more of like a codependent duo. And so I don't know, I feel like hearing that piece of information, which is something that Stephanie and Alexia bonded over in the spa day, it explained a lot about the Alexia and Marisol thing as well. So anyway, you know, I feel like that landed in terms of like, Stephanie is still very mad at Marisol now. And it was this funny thing where Marisol was like in the general part of the spa, but they were in like a mud room or like the hot marble room or something. So she knew they were in there, but she didn't know what they were talking about. So I don't know. I think that is a really interesting little dynamic. Like if Alexia and Stephanie stay close, and I think all signs point to Stephanie and Marisol still not having worked things out between them, that could be really complicated for next season. And that's a compelling dynamic right there.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
I was also glad to see Lisa and Larsa finally make up. Like they have been going in circles over, you know, Lisa not unfollowing Marcus and Larsa being insensitive to Lisa's situation with Lenny and Jody, and just like they had so much going on between them. But the thing that I still want answers on, you guys, is the accusation that Larsa called the paparazzi on Marcus when those photos were taken of him in Europe doing cocaine out in the open on a balcony. Because that's a big accusation. That is an accusation that, you know, obviously the pictures were very different, but calling the paparazzi is something that was a huge, like, season-long storyline. We're still talking about it now on Orange County a season later. And on Miami, it's this sort of like blink and you miss it thing that still has not been explained. Like, why does Lisa think that Larsa called the paparazzi? Does she know the paparazzi? Does she know somebody who has proof that Larsa did this? Because obviously, you know, the idea that Marcus Jordan's being followed all around, you know, southern France so they can catch him doing drugs, that's far-fetched. She does not have paparazzi following him around the world. But if somebody tipped them off, I'm not saying that's Larsa, but like somebody probably did tip them off. So like, does Lisa know something? I need that explained. Hopefully at the reunion, we get that explained, because that was sort of the bone that Larsa still had to pick with Lisa. And they sort of, you know, Lisa was like, let's just fucking move forward. Like, why are we still relitigating the past? And that was the advice that Alexia had given Larsa the night before, or that morning, like being just like, stop talking about the past, which yes, but also if I'm Larsa, I wouldn't get past that quickly, I guess, without an explanation. But yeah, I'm happy that they made up. It definitely doesn't last, because I think right now, like in current times, post reunion, I think that they're still not on good terms and they seem still mad at one another. And I actually think that them fighting is funny, good TV, but I also do think that they're kind of fun together too. So I hope that like this doesn't last for too much longer. And then I think that the other, you know, really kind of powerful thing about this episode was Gertie's therapy scene. Cause I feel like therapy scenes generally like are pretty hokey. They feel pretty set up and staged for the cameras, especially couples therapy scenes. And you know, this was an entirely a natural therapy scene, but I do think that it felt like Russell helped Gertie uncover this thing about herself, that she has this trauma that she has not worked through. And it's sort of showing itself now post-cancer and sort of in the drama with the women. And I think for her to sort of go out of her way to like find a therapist that she can talk to this about pretty quickly and to really work on it immediately and to like be open about it with us as an audience, I thought that was really authentic feeling, honestly. And I thought that she seemed to genuinely want to work through it. And it didn't seem super performative to me to do this therapy scene. Because again, I'm just saying that because it feels like a lot of therapy scenes on Housewives can feel very staged, performative, hokey, whatever. So I just thought it was a really nice scene. And it felt good to see Gertie like just take this sort of bull by the horns and to sort of try to address these things that are showing themselves. Also, last thing, I just love that. I love that we're getting another performance from Adriana for the finale party. I feel like every season has to have sort of a finale Adriana performance of some sort, and I'm glad we're getting another one this year. All right, then this week's Orange County, Heather had said on Instagram that it was going to be a lighter and fun, more fun episode. That was generally true until the end. But I do love that we're going on these two separate trips. If you listen to this podcast, you've probably heard me sort of wax poetic about like when housewives will do mini cast trips. I love when they do this. I think it just like, it changes up the dynamic. It's not always like a kind of a grope dinner. And I think it allows for like a smaller group of the women to really get to know one another. Because when you travel with one another, you do see other sides to people. I just think it's fun. I think it changes it up and you can really kind of do these interesting little groups of people. And so we have Heather hosting a sleepover with Emily and Gretchen. And then we have Tamara organizing a trip to Temecula with Jen, Gina, and Shannon. And that obviously is a very interesting dynamic because Tamara is trying to get to a better place with Jen and Shannon in real time. And Gina is sort of like she's sort of the pawn in all of this, or sort of the person that's going to have to deal with the fallout, the inevitable fallout when Tamara starts to argue with them. You know what I mean? She's the other shoulder to cry on. So let's talk about Heather's quickly. She has this like grand setup. She has these beds set up in her big living room. I loved the line when Emily was like, is that a bird outside of her window? And she was like, this is too high for birds. They're walking down Rodeo Drive to go to dinner. And I hated this. They're like, oh, there's paparazzi. And this random paparazzi woman is on the corner, just happens to be there, face unblurred because she signed the release. And she's like, oh, by the way, Heather, I know you didn't plant those paparazzi. I know the guy who took the photos. I know you didn't call them. And Heather's like, thank you, I'm vindicated. And I'm like, wait a second. So we're supposed to believe that this random woman, paparazzo, on the corner in Beverly Hills, happens to see you walking, you know, a couple days after the lie detector test event, which claimed that you were lying about the paparazzi. And again, I don't ascribe, as I said, to the lie detector results for any of them. I don't hold that as sort of proof of the truth. But them happening to run into this woman while they're filming the show a couple days later, and her, you know, negating the results of the lie detector test, and that was a rough moment. Come on, we're not fools. That was wild.
Experience a membership that backs what you're building with American Express Business Platinum. Get 2x membership rewards points per dollar on eligible purchases in key business categories, as well as on each eligible purchase of $5,000 or more, on up to $2 million in eligible purchases per calendar year. American Express Business Platinum. There's nothing like it. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-platinum.
So then they go to dinner, and Emily tells Heather that Jen thinks that Heather pacifies Tamara because she's scared of her. And Heather's like, and I love this response from Heather. Instead of like kind of immediately going off about Jen, she's like, what was your response? And Emily doesn't remember her response, conveniently. But then we have the footage of it that it gets played. And she basically says that Heather does pacify Tamara, but it's not because she's scared of her. It's to avoid Tamara's aggressiveness. And so in the moment, Emily's like, I mean, I think I did agree with her, but I don't remember. And Heather does have a good point here. She's like, wait, I'm the only one who went to Tamara and sat her down and was like, I'm hurt by how you just left that trip and how you like they hashed it out and they had that lunch with the hot waiter. But Heather's right. She's the only one that took it to her. And then everybody else, when Tamara walked into the lie detector test event, like cowed to her and was like, oh, like, I don't want to find, like, they kind of like glossed over it. I don't even think that it's that Heather's scared of Tamara. I just think that it gives off the vibe of that they have some sort of truce to not question one another in a big way and to not fight with one another in a big way. That's sort of what I get from it. I don't think it means she's scared of her. I think it gives like agreement, you know? So I think that Heather was right to push back on the scared thing, but I do think there is something weird about how Heather responds to, you know, criticism of Tamara on the show. All right, so then we're back at the Temecula trip. They've gone to this winery. They've been drinking wine. Shannon's drunk. Tamara's drunk. Gina's the only sober one there. And the quote-unquote fatty photo gets brought up. And this is clearly a game of telephone. Because when Tamara brought it up, she didn't call it a fatty photo. And when Heather told Gina, as the footage showed us on this episode, she also did not call it a fatty photo. She says that she was heavier, but Gina's the one that is remembering it as a fat photo. So it's a classic game of telephone, right? And Jen is specifically offended by the label of the fatty photo, and then the idea that Tamara's going around showing this photo. Obviously, Tamara showing the photo at all is rude and uncalled for and implying a lot. The actual label and the word that everyone's getting offended by was not what Tamara used. But she does express regret to Jen. She's like, I was probably just being really shady. I regret doing that. I shouldn't have done that. And she says to her, though, like, she's like, I just think you've changed. She's like, you're less quiet. You look different. You're thinner. You're less timid and whatever. And Jen's like, yeah, I have changed. And I've actually, not only have I changed, I feel like I'm finally myself. I'm stronger. I'm more likely to assert my opinion. And so that's good change from Jen's perspective, and actually from my perspective as well. And Jen thinks that Tamara just is insecure and hates the fact that Jen, you know, looks this good and she's more outspoken. It's more threatening to Tamara, certainly. So I think that Jen has a good point there. Tamara's not wrong, but it's not something necessarily that should bring on criticism. And Tamara also brings up sort of maybe some of the questionable nature of how Jen and Ryan first got together, implying that there was overlap, that they cheated with one another. And in her confessional, Shannon's like, essentially, Tamara's a hypocrite because she had an affair with Eddie when she was married to Simon. So the whole point of this trip was for Tamara to be able to continue to move forward with Jen and Shannon. And I think once she got drunk on the wine, she started to, you know, be a little bit aggressive and say things that she shouldn't have said and find issue with things she shouldn't have found issue with. And it's not lasting, obviously. Like, they're both still not going to be happy with her after this trip. Shannon says that she can't take accountability. And she tells Tamara, which is kind of a really intense line, I've never been better without you in my life. That's a bold statement to make. And I believe it from Shannon in a lot of ways and not in some. But that's a big statement to make. And then Tamara hits back that she's worried about Shannon. So yeah, it's a to-be-continued situation, but it's classic. Like, Tamara organizes this trip. Oh my God, we're all on such good terms. And then, as Gina says, she just can't help herself. So yeah, that is it. Those are my big thoughts on Miami and Orange County for this week, and some of the hot topics from Bravo, from around the Bravoverse this week. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. Would love a 5-star rating. Would love a positive review. Really helps the show. And we will be back next week with some episodes about The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which is finally back on Wednesday. I interviewed one of the women, so that's going to be Tuesday's episode. And then we'll do a premiere breakdown for Friday. So lots to look forward to in the Bravoverse this fall. Appreciate you guys listening, and have a great weekend. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.